The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. It's a live show, March 16th, 2003, on what has to be the most beautiful day of the year in East Central Illinois. And I hope some of you are listening to the radio in your backyard or something, but certainly not inside. It's too lovely of a day to be inside. Today, we've got a great show for you. I think over the past few months, as the war talk on Iraq and the prospective war in Iraq has heated up, one of the striking stories that has developed, a subplot, if you will, has been the exceptional amount of dissidence and opposition to the war coming from celebrities, entertainers, who've spoken up against the war and been prominent in the news media in their opposition to the war. And it's been a source of great controversy, many of the celebrities being criticized, but in any case, oftentimes being listened to. Today on Media Matters, we're greatly privileged to have as our guests two of the people who have been among those active in criticizing the war, and two representatives of the Hollywood community who have been very active in political life and in social life and in activism for really decades. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, political activism by celebrities, by stars, and specifically the issues that move our two guests today, Robert Greenwald and Mike Farrell. Robert Greenwald has been a leading figure in independent filmmaking for decades. He's produced and directed dozens of movies and television programs over the years. His body of work has earned numerous Emmy and Golden Globe nominations and drawn wide praise and attention. His credits include the movie Steal This Movie, about Abbie Hoffman, Hear No Evil, and then most recently the television movie The Crooked E, The Unshredded Truth About Enron. Our other guest is Mike Farrell. Mike Farrell probably needs no introduction to many of you. He's an actor, producer, writer, and director. He's been involved in numerous film projects in a variety of roles, and he's probably best known for his portrayal of Dr. B.J. Honeycutt on the long-running and highly acclaimed television series MASH. A political and social activist, Mike Farrell has been a leading figure for many years in the movement for human rights, aid for refugees, and reform of the domestic judicial system. In particular, Mike Farrell has been a stalwart in the campaign to end capital punishment and get rid of the death penalty in the United States. Robert, Mike, are you both there?
I'm here. Robert, are you with us?
I guess we've got Mike. We're waiting for, we're going to get Robert here in a second. But Mike, until we get Robert, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
And did you listen to the press conference that was just on the air?
I did not. What's up?
Well, it was from the Azores. It was President Bush, Prime Minister Blair, and Premier Aznar of Spain, basically talking that tomorrow is the moment of truth, as President Bush put it, and that war will begin very soon unless they get their way.
Mm.
Now, you have been active on the war front or anti-war front. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct.
And what's your sense of, what's your take on this issue, the war in Iraq? Why do you oppose a U.S. invasion of Iraq?
Well, I think, there are any number of premises upon which to oppose it. I think that it's inappropriate to strike a nation that poses no threat to us, and there's no demonstrable threat to our nation coming from Iraq. I think what we have seen is a series of proposed rationales put forward by the administration, possession of weapons of mass destruction, the possession and or the ability to create a nuclear weapon, ties with Al-Qaeda and the terrorists, etc. and so forth, each of which, upon analysis, has dissolved of its own weight. And when you look at that and you see that the administration simply has no abiding rationale for a war that stands up to scrutiny, you begin to wonder what the underlying reality is, what the hidden agenda is. And it seems to me, while I've heard speculation about a number of them, I can't speak for them, but whatever that hidden agenda is, I think that we as Americans deserve to have it out in the open, have it debated, and determine if that's a reason for us to put not only the lives of our own service men and women at risk, but to risk the results of such an action, which will not only kill, God knows, thousands of innocent Iraqi civilians, but also further inflame and enrage the people in the Muslim world who believe that the United States means to conquer and destroy them, and probably drive significant numbers of them into the arms of Osama bin Laden and other Islamists who want to do us harm.
Robert Greenwald, have you joined us now?
I have indeed.
Well, thank you very much, Robert, for joining us. We've got Mike on the line. He's been explaining his opposition to the war in Iraq. Did you have a chance to listen to the press conference just before we went on the air?
I did not.
Oh, boy, you guys are not listening to your getting your NPR Wheaties in the morning here. But Mike just gave his assessment of the war. Robert, you didn't get a chance to hear much of it, I suspect. But if you did, or whatever, would you like to add a few words on your position on the prospective war in Iraq?
Well, I think it's one of the most terrifying, one of the most important decisions that we as Americans have been and will be involved in. And towards that end, both Mike and I have spent the last 6 months almost full time doing what we can to raise the issues of why we're going to war and to try to resist the war. There are many alternatives to going to war, and there are some that are working. I mean, depending on where you are in the political spectrum and what you think about the issues of weapons, but there are an enormous number of possible ways to handle the problems that are perceived without war.
Now, both of you are prominent in the Hollywood community, and Mike, you specifically are known as an actor of a lot of celebrity. What exactly can you do? What have you been doing over the last few months to try to raise awareness of the issues surrounding the war, draw attention to them, and engage with the public?
Well, Bob, what Robert and I talked about, as he suggests, months and months ago, was our concern at the rising level of bellicosity and jingoism that was coming out of the Bush administration, the shift from what many see, and myself included, see as a legitimate focus on terrorism and the dangers that terrorism poses to this country, into a kind of political agenda that that was being promoted by this right-wing cabal around the president. And a major step in it was, as far as I could see, and we could determine, this war in Iraq. And we were increasingly upset about the fact that while we heard many voices of opposition to the development of the war among our circle, and every once in a while one would peek through the media, we knew that there was a huge pool of people who did not agree with this, but there didn't seem to be any organized effort. There didn't seem to be any way for those voices to break through what we began to perceive as the media curtain of cheerleaders and drumbeaters in support of the administration's view. So in discussing it, we thought, maybe if we could get just sort of draft a statement and get a few people who are well known to sign this statement. We know that the media sort of flocks to celebrities like moths to the flame, and if we could simply get this statement out into the public discourse, we could hopefully encourage other communities to say, these folks are saying this, maybe it's time for us to say this, and try and generate some debate in the country.
And how that was about 2-3 months ago that you got this first petition or advertisement out, is that right?
Actually, I think it was closer to 4 or 5 months.
Oh, that long? My God, time flies.
It was early December that we had a press conference, which, again, Mike and I started with our computers and our phones and very low expectations, hoping we'd get 6 or 7 people, which we started after hearing Scott Ritter speak in October. When we had the press conference in early December, we had over 100 people, and what Mike and I thought would be a one-shot has now turned into virtually a full-time job for two of us plus an executive secretary, and we guesstimated that in this period of time through these actors, Mike included, who've gone on all the talk shows on television, have gone on hate radio, have been in the press, we've reached over 110 million people, which is truly extraordinary, and we're now the subject of a Gallup poll about whether you listen to celebrities or not, which, by the way, is the wrong question. Well, the question really is not you're going to change your mind because you hear Mike or Angelica Houston say something. Really, the question is, have you heard about opposition to the war through the celebrities? That's been our goal.
I mean, yeah, I gather. I mean, you're not clearly arguing that celebrities, are constitutionally mandated to be the official opposition of society, but rather it's just taking advantage of your position to raise issues that weren't being raised otherwise. Is that a better way to put it?
Exactly. And in fact, because we knew that we'd be crucified for having the audacity to stand up and say these things that are so unacceptable to so many people, we specifically aligned ourselves with the views and the actual solidarity of former members of the diplomatic community, military experts, veterans of wars, who signed our statement as well. And the hope was that we would be able to get these experts who were not able to get access to the media the opportunity to join us when we are invited to speak on these various issues.
Has that taken place? I mean, when you get a chance to do a radio or television show, are you able to bring along an arms expert or diplomatic expert to join you?
Sure. We've done that any number of times and continue to try. Oddly, and perhaps not so oddly when you think about the intelligence behind the effort, and I believe it's quite well organized, having turned the issue to some degree into whether it's appropriate for celebrities to speak out has muted somewhat our ability to bring these experts along with us because, Bill O'Reilly only wants to talk to me about whether or not it's okay for me to do what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so less the actual issues than just the issue of celebrity becomes the dominant issue.
And that's what they've tried to do with some success, but I think not entire success.
I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters Today. It's a live show. My guests are Robert Greenwald, Hollywood director and producer, Mike Farrell, actor, director, producer, and longtime star of the show MASH, is B.J. Honeycutt. We're talking about the celebrities and the opposition to the war in Iraq and just celebrity activism in general. Unfortunately, because we have two guests today and our conference line is not working right now, we can't take live calls. I apologize that to our listeners. And we have a lot of listeners who wanted to call in and talk to our guests. But what we can do is if you call in to our number, 333-9455, you can give your question to our producer, Ben Scott, and Ben will relay it to me, and I'll get it to our guests, Robert Greenwald and Mike Farrell. So please do call in and give Ben your question. The number again, 333-9455. One of the things that struck me, Robert and Mike, with your campaign and the broader sort of involvement of celebrities has been the enormous number of celebrities who've spoken out on this issue compared to previous issues. I've been politically active for 3 decades and followed this closely, and I get fundraising letters periodically. I've probably gotten 50 or 100 from you, Mike. And so you get used to seeing certain names, Martin Sheen, Mike Farrell, Ed Asner. There's a handful of people who you commonly associate with critical attitudes towards U.S. foreign policy, towards the death penalty and social justice issues. But this issue seems to have just brought people out of the woodwork. Is that your sense too, Robert?
Well, I think it's a combination. I think, yes, I was profoundly moved by the level of concern and the number of people in October, November, and December, when there was no anti-war movement publicly being recognized. So the number of actors to come forward, speak out, and willing to take a stance at that point because they felt how crucially important this was as citizens in a democracy, as patriots, I thought was wonderful. However, one of the things I think that that's the most important. The other part of it is, until Mike and I started this group, Artists United to Win Without War, there was no kind of concerted effort to organize, coordinate, and work with people who cared. We've been fortunate enough to start this group. We have a terrific executive director in Kate McCardle. And so now, between the three of us, it's an ongoing dialogue with people in our community. And every day, someone comes forward. Now they have a place. Now they have an outlet. And we can arrange everything from speaking on college campuses to talking at rallies, to going to Washington, D.C., to doing a television show, to having a print interview. We now have a mechanism in place, so it's not quite so scattershot. So I think it's a combination, Bob, both of the actors and actresses realizing the importance of the issue, combined now with a simple mechanism so that we can help channel it and that they are working with people who are professional and in the field so we can meet a certain level of expertise and professionalism in handling.
Let me just add, if I might,
sure,
to that.
Yeah,
Bob,
please do, Mike.
That it must make the people from the administration and the people from the right wing who are trying to organize support for this war tear their hair out to hear that three of us, as Robert just suggested, three people are coordinating what has turned into a serious headache for them. But I think it's a result of the fact that on some fundamental level, people were frightened by President Bush saying, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Then further alarmed by Ari Fleischer saying, watch what you say. And then incensed by Attorney General Ashcroft effectively saying anybody who opposes the administration's policies was giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I think we've seen this phalanx of ugliness built up, and people were simply looking for a way in which to express their opposition to it.
Do you anticipate that this might generate into a long-term thing that goes beyond this war, or do you think this is just sort of you'll play it by ear and see what happens down the road?
Well, my hope personally is that it will continue. At some point, the war is going to happen or not happen. It's going to have its own playing out, but certainly the issues that are behind the war, the issues of U.S. imperialism, the issues of social justice, are going to continue. And I believe that the large group of actors that we're talking to have, not that we'll agree on everything, because we all don't even agree on the war, by the way. There's every spectrum except feeling that what's going on is not right. But I think there'll be a series of social justice issues and that we will hopefully slowly begin to address as we see how the other 125 members feel about it and what they're willing to do, and to making the connection to win without war. There are a series of issues that can be won without war, if you will, both foreign and domestic.
You're listening to Media Matters today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Our guest joining us from their homes in Los Angeles, Robert Greenwald, the producer and director, Mike Farrell, actor, producer, writer, and director. And we're talking about the celebrity opposition to the prospective war in Iraq and the role of celebrities in our political culture in general. Our phone lines, regrettably, are down for over-the-air calls, but if you want to call in and you have a question, you can give it to our producer, Ben Scott, and Ben will relay to me via the wonders of computers. The number here is 333-9455, and we do have a couple questioners already. Let's go to them right away. The first caller we had, Mike and Robert, wants to know why celebrities weren't protesting against Iraqi atrocities for the last 20 years, not to mention American complicity with them. Why now? Why is it just now? Where were all of you guys in the 80s and 90s when, all Iraq was doing these terrible things?
Well, of course, as the co-chair of Human Rights Watch in California, I would be quick to point out that we were. Many people were expressing their opposition both to the depredations of Saddam Hussein, and let me make clear that none of us are supportive of Saddam Hussein. We all believe he is a danger that must be dealt with and disarmed and ultimately, in my view, brought before a war crimes tribunal. But to go back to this suggestion, obviously the human rights community for many years has been out there trying to bring attention to the very kinds of uglinesses that have been perpetrated by people like Saddam Hussein with the complicity of the United States government in terms particularly of the use of biological and chemical warfare. So the suggestion implied in the question simply is incorrect. Many people have been very active for quite a long time. And the second part is, this is going to be a war. This is going to be a war that kills thousands of people, and it's going to be a war that is fought for, as I suggested earlier, a reason that has not yet been fully and clearly and honestly articulated. And I think many people have become much more aware and thus much more active as a result of the dawning of an understanding of what is about to be perpetrated.
I would echo what and agree with Mike on that, and I also don't quite understand this notion that, well, if you weren't against it in 1980, when some of our members weren't even born, by the way, you don't have a right to be against the war now. I mean, whatever is the past is the past. From my point of view, I welcome with both arms people who are seeing things differently or realizing the importance of war, maybe were with Mike on the human rights stuff for 20 years, maybe didn't realize the importance. There's a whole range of opinion. But again, I get this a bit on some of these shows, and I'm not quite sure its relevancy or its importance. We're faced with a war today I think we want all the allies possible on our side fighting that war now.
We have another caller who called in for us and asked, says that assuming the war starts in a matter of days, what should anti-war activists do? What should be their focus? This is something I suspect both of you have given a lot of thought to. Mike, you want to?
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, obviously, all of us want our people in the armed services to come home and to come home safely. And I think what we have to do is continue to demonstrate that our opposition to the war is not opposition to our troops. It is opposition to the mindlessness that is behind this war. And it is going to continue. We want to put the magnifying glass on the policies and the mindsets that have established this war and the power that has carried this war or this prospective war forward in the face of the huge opposition of not only the people of the United States but the people across this across the world. And I would like to expand that concept just a bit, if I might, Bob.
Sure.
To say the following. I was asked the other night on a television show if I would apologize once the war goes forward and weapons of mass destruction were found in the hands of Saddam Hussein. And I said I would absolutely not apologize because I believe if there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, we have the capacity through the continued use of this inspections protocol to discover them without the shedding of blood, and that there are many steps that can be taken in between what we are now doing and what Mr. Bush is intending to promote. But it would seem to me that who needs it to be thinking about apologizing is not only the president, but the people that are behind this policy that is going to be putting at risk the lives of our military personnel without justification. And I would repeat that, without justification. They have tried to create the reasons for going to war, and in this process, they have used plagiarized material, forged material, they have lied, they have tricked, they have tried every device they can in order to convince people that it is necessary. And it seems to me that when blood is spilled, there is an apology necessary, and it ought to come from those folks.
Robert, do you want to add anything?
Yes. I feel very strongly that if war comes and lives are lost, our jobs will be sort of twofold. Depending on if it's a short war and it's over quickly, then there will be the need to make sure that humanitarian aid and building of the society is in place. If it's a long war, then there are issues of, while at the same time supporting our troops, trying to figure out if there are ways that the UN can become a player in ending the war. But certainly nobody has the easy answer. I think what we want to try to do is, I believe the peace movement has made an enormous difference. In my lifetime, didn't think I would see millions and millions of people in the street all over the world protesting policy. That has to affect the future, which, remember, is, as by the Bush administration's own language, this is part of it, whether it's the domino theory of democracy in the Middle East or on to Iran. I mean, there are future. This is one step in a philosophy and one step in a process. And to the degree we continue to encounter and struggle, whether there is war, but continuing to fight all of these fights, I think we affect the future dynamics of what's going to happen. And I think most tragically, there will be people's lives who will be lost and unnecessarily. That's a tragedy, and I think we have to keep that in mind and call attention to it.
I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters Today on WILL AM 580 in Urbana, Illinois. My guests are Robert Greenwald and Mike Farrell. We're talking about the war in Iraq and social justice movements in general and the role of celebrities and entertainers in our society in popularizing positions on them, and specifically, in this case, opposition to the war in Iraq, which has become a subplot of recent times in our media culture, as it's been probably the most pronounced, if not the only pronounced, opposition to the government position has come from entertainers and celebrities in our commercial news media. Our phone lines, regrettably, are not working to get people over the air, but if you do want to call in and have a question, our producer, Ben Scott, is taking your calls, and he will use the computer to transfer them to me, and I will get them to our guests, Mike Farrell and Robert Greenwald. The number here is 333-9455. And the comment you just made, Robert, leads to our next questioner, who asks, how strong is the anti-war movement, do each of you think? And both of you are veterans. You've been around a while of social activism. What's your assessment of the U.S. and maybe global anti-war movement today and how it compares to earlier incarnations?
Well, I can. Yesterday, we had a rally in Los Angeles. Los Angeles, this is a city where people leave the Laker games early to get to their cars. It was pouring rain, and I mean pouring, and there were thousands and thousands of people in the streets at the rally marching through the city. It was extraordinary, singing, dancing. There's no way ever to measure the numbers, but we all know that change is made by committed groups, and the passion that I've experienced in the last 6 months, the number of people who care from a variety of opinions about stopping this war is really inspiring and wondrous, particularly when you think since October, we've got this one message out of the White House, which is war. We've had the disappearance of what used to be called a Democratic Party or an opposition party. So in spite of all of that, to have this level of vitality and passion, MoveOn.org has 1.2 million people now. They push a button and they're able to reach them. Bush has revitalized the peace movement in a way that nobody thought was possible.
Mike, you want to?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that's quite right. And I would add to the litany of or the list of the people who are promoting the war talk to, in general, the electronic media in this country, which has been, I think, shameful in its drumbeating and its cheerleading for the Bush administration and for its commercialization and its presentation of, you know, the kind of countdown to war and showdown with Iraq sort of mentality. I think
I shouldn't laugh, but it's a
very sad thing. But I think all of this adds up to what Robert is talking about. I think that this is not just a group of flower children out saying war is not a good thing for children and other living things. This is people saying we're being lied to and manipulated. Our will is being ignored for purposes that are not being made clear to us, and we don't want this country to be stolen from us by a group of people with their own agenda who are not honest enough to tell us what it is.
Which is again why I think this movement is so vibrant and so powerful and so widespread, is there is a sense that people understand, yes, it's about this war, but it's exactly what Mike is saying. It's about these larger issues, both in terms of this country and around the world, about our country or our world or our democracies being taken away in this drive towards war. I also think that the other thing that's incredibly encouraging about this is I believe we are building the way it has to come from the grassroots up. The politicians will follow at some point. We're starting to see it with some of the Democratic Party candidates. But I think the more that we all stay involved in creating and furthering this tremendous support at the local and basic levels, we will really have the possibility of affecting change in a meaningful way.
You know, we've got a couple of people now have called and asked, suggested that perhaps by having you on the show, both of you, we're giving a misleading impression that celebrities are united en masse in opposition to the war, when in fact, a couple of callers said, isn't it true that there are many celebrities who in fact favor the Bush administration policy? And shouldn't we be giving them a chance to be acknowledged as well? So is there a countergroup, dears, or some of celebrities or counter force of celebrities who are saying, wait a second, Farrell and Greenwald and these people all have it wrong. We should be supporting the war.
Well, certainly there is an attempt to put together some sort of counter force. But the implication of the question, again, is wrong. Those celebrities who support this administration, those celebrities who support the Bush administration, those celebrities who support the war, have never had any problem being heard. None of us would suggest that free speech only goes one way. Unfortunately, what we've realized is that if the other side has its way, that's exactly the way it works.
Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are some actors and actresses, and of course there's a diversity of opinion in our community, as in all communities. But if you turn on television or radio, you don't hear that diversity of opinion. And again, our goal would be, in the ideal world, to st- step forward, raise a ruckus, and then step back and let, you know, Norman Solomon and Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn and Tom Hayden, let all these people who spent their lives studying these things be out there talking. But that is not an option in the media as we currently know it until Mr. McChesney is successful in changing the media.
Well, that's me, Mr. McChesney. This is Media Matters. Our guests are Mike Farrell and Robert Greenwald. We're talking about celebrity activism, Hollywood activism, specifically against the prospective war in Iraq. Our phone lines are not accepting calls over the air, but if you do call in, our producer, Ben Scott, will relay your question to me, and I will get it to our guests. The number here is 333-9455. Another caller wants to know, if there is a threat of a blacklist, which we've heard a little bit of talk about, for entertainers, public celebrities, well, I guess that's a redundancy, people who speak out against the administration position and take a controversial stand, is there a possibility this might hurt their prospects of getting employment in the entertainment industry? Has this been something that you've been hearing at all about, Mike?
Sure. You don't have to look any further than the Dixie Chicks, who were recently stripped of the right to have their records played on certain radio stations because they had the audacity to speak out against Mr. Bush and his policies. But further than that, we've been hearing for some time, you know, not only attacks on celebrities and their credibility and their intelligence and their patriotism, but also on their right to work. And that's where it crosses the line. We all understand when we stand up and say we disagree with this policy. From our perspective, we're speaking in the best traditions of American patriotism and exercising our right to free speech. But we also know that there are others who will disagree and they will denounce us in any way they see fit. Given the history of this country and given the history of our community in particular, we are very aware and very wary of the development of a kind of blacklist, official or unofficial, that takes the tack that people who speak out or act out unacceptably should be stripped of their right to work. And that has happened in a number of instances so far, or the attempts to do that have happened in a number of instances so far. And as a result of that, many of us simply have been strongly in favor of, and it resulted in a statement being made by the Screen Actors Guild and joined by the International Association of Theatrical and Stage Employees and the Writers Guild and Directors Guild, I believe, and American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, saying the right of free speech must be supported and cherished and protected, and that all people who speak on all sides of all issues must be recognized as having the right to do so.
Now, both of you have been social activists in addition to being involved in the entertainment industry for decades. Have either of you faced what you think, you know, was any sort of blacklisting or at least damage to your the commercial success of your career at all as a result of your political activity?
Well, you know, it's different, Mike, being an actor, different for somebody behind the scenes, but one thing is that, I mean, I want to comment on that in a couple of ways. Number one, we have 125 people. Our biggest problem is getting them to do the shows, not because they don't want to do them, but because so many of them are working. So from that point of view, it's a vibrant, successful group who continues to work. And I think part of the blacklisting story, again, has been created by those on the right and is an effort to shut us up and shut us down. It's not going to happen. But there's a part of me that really doesn't quite get it. I mean, I understand having differences with the right, but the effort to go to trying to stop us from talking rather than engage in the dialogue, engage in the debate, lest the best ideas win, is a part of the right that really I just don't understand in terms of American and in terms of patriotism. I personally have gotten in the last few months actually several calls from people at fairly high levels at networks and at studios and at theatrical agencies saying, thank you for doing what you're doing. We are glad you're doing it. We support it. Again, remember, this is not a year and a half ago. Over half of the country is against the war in some shape or form.
You know, we're being flooded with callers who've got in questions, and I really want to get to all of them. We've only got about 16 or 17 minutes left, so I promise all of you who've called in, I'll do my best to get to all your calls. One follow-up question on that is, if there is sort of a blacklist of sorts, or at least there's been some concern, like the case of the Dixie Chicks, which you just gave, Mike, Is this apply also to entertainers who come out vocally in favor of the war? Are they facing threats to their career? Dennis Miller, for example, or David Spade, or some of the other entertainers who've been critical of the celebrities who oppose the war and have been sort of chastising them. Are they also facing similar threats to their ability to get employment, do you think?
I've heard of none, but I don't think, again, Bob, I don't want to suggest that there is this organized blacklist, but, I've always had people keep saying to me over the years, you know, you're active on this and you're active on that. Don't you think that you're going to be blacklisted? My sense is that the blacklist was so ugly and shameful a period in our history that nobody's going to resort to that, even though some may decide to try, or as Robert just suggested, may try to wave that that banner as a way to intimidate people, keep them from speaking out. But mm-hmm. I've always felt if there's somebody who doesn't want to work with me, there will probably be somebody else who does for all of the wrong reasons, and it's never hurt my career. So I don't think that David Spade, as you suggest, or any of the others who are speaking out in support of the war need worry.
I personally am going to hire both David Spade and the Dixie Chicks when I have the chance.
Okay, great. Now, we've got a caller who's asking each of you to answer this question. Are there any defensible U.S. interventions? What about Somalia, Kosovo, Bosnia? What do you think of the idea of humanitarian interventions?
I personally support it. I've long been a believer that what we ought to have is a United Nations strike force that can and should be organized under the aegis of the United Nations to go into areas like Kosovo, to go into areas like Bosnia, to go into areas like Rwanda, and stop these kinds of ethnic slaughters when they are developing, so that we can in fact find a way to enforce the concepts of international law and world order. I don't think it ought to be something that's done unilaterally by the United States when it suits its political purposes.
I'm in agreement. I think it's a question, particularly as the world gets more interrelated, more complicated, we're each other's neighbors in meaningful and profound ways. This must become an issue of the United Nations and of world order for the protection of all of us and for the world.
We're talking to Mike Farrell and Robert Greenwald on Media Matters today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Our phone lines are not working, but you can call in a question if you have one to our producer, Ben Scott, at 333-9455. And Ben will relay it to me through the magic of computers. We have a caller, a gentleman who called in and said, is the polarization of debate between the ultra-right, I assume meaning the Bush administration, and the protesting left meant that it's made it impossible for policymakers to explore a gray area alternative, a compromise? Are we too polarized in our debate over the war, do you think?
Gee, I sure don't think so. I think the real one wants to cast the debate. Some want to cast the debate in those sort of polemical terms. But all we're suggesting, all the people that we are speaking for and with are suggesting, is that the United Nations be allowed to do the job it has mandated be done by allowing the inspectors to do their work on the ground in Iraq. That's disarming Saddam Hussein is a good thing. I think everybody recognizes that. So it's not an issue of go home and sit on your hands or go to war. There are certainly viable alternatives that need to be seriously discussed and, in my view, implemented.
Yeah, I think the strength and vitality of the peace movement is really crucial to further dialogue and further, compromise and finding solutions. Because without it, sadly, we have this small group in the White House that I believe is in extremist position. But this is not going to be the only country that we're going to be facing disarmament issues with. Are we planning to go to war with every single country? We need to develop policies, and toward that, as you will, compromises or dialogue. And I think, unfortunately, with this particular group that we have right now, the only way to get their attention is screaming loud and, you know, send millions of people into the streets.
Yeah, let me just add,
sure.
Bob, it's inappropriate to say that to sort of characterize the anti-war movement as this sort of faceless mob that wants to put daisies in the rifle barrels. You know, we are made up of conservatives and liberals and Republicans and Democrats and people from the United States and people from all over the world. But when you get Pat Buchanan writing a screed attacking this what he calls war party, and saying that there is no appropriate reason for the United States to go to war in Iraq, it suggests that this is not just a left-right dialogue.
Speaking of which, we had a caller without a question, though, called in, just wanted us to announce over the air that he was a military veteran and a former weapons inspector in the Soviet Union who was calling to endorse the position of Robert Greenwald and Mike Farrell. He sees no justification for war. We had another caller, though, who called in, Mike, and said, what if Mr. Bush is right? What if Saddam Hussein does indeed have weapons of mass destruction, and what if he is actively planning to use them against us? Doesn't that justify war? I guess you've spoken to that a little bit. Do you want to sum up again in answer to that?
Sure. Of course, it does not justify war. You know, that's the belief, obviously, of certain people in the Bush administration, in spite of the evidence. So far, they haven't been able to produce any evidence that those things exist. But if they do, that is what the weapons inspectors are there to determine, and if they can find them, to disable. And they have said that they can do their job within a matter of months. It seems to me that what we ought to be doing is supporting, and not only by supporting by allowing, but also supporting by providing ample intelligence that is helpful to them in doing their job. As you may know, the weapons inspectors have been quoted in CBS News and other places now as calling that intelligence that the U.S. has provided garbage, saying it's been sending them off on wild goose chases and keeping them from successfully doing their job. So let's let the inspectors do their work. And if they come to a place where they are so near this hidden cache of weapons of mass destruction that the Bush administration claims are there, that they are obstructed by Saddam Hussein, then I would personally support a surgical strike on that area once it is determined where it is. And that's certainly not only my view. That's the view of former ambassador to Iraq, Joe Wilson, or the Carnegie Endowment for Peace, a muscular inspections are an alternative that is not even being considered by the Bush administration.
Robert, do you want to add to that?
Well, yes, there is a country that has nuclear weapons that is a serious, potentially a serious threat to us, and the evidence is there. You know, one likes to proceed with evidence. It's North Korea, and it concerns me greatly because I think there's, for whatever set of reasons, there's this obsession with Iraq. And there are very serious substantive issues that affect the safety of the country and the world that are being ignored and pushed aside and not dealt with. And I would hope that with time those questions will be raised sooner rather than later, and a policy other than war will be evolved and discovered and moved towards.
I might add to your comment, Robert, that recently Seymour Hersh has done some reporting on Pakistan's nuclear capability, which suggests that it, too, is far more of a threat to world peace than Iraq if one is concerned about weapons of mass destruction.
Yes, exactly.
Can I add to that, Bob?
Yeah, please do.
Seymour Hersh also recently wrote an article about Richard Perl, who is one of the primary architects of this whole Iraq war thesis. And Pearl, in responding to it, called Seymour Hersh a terrorist, which goes back to the, if you're not with us, you're with the terrorists.
Yeah, that's quite a statement, one of the leading journalists of our times to be called a terrorist. We have a few more callers. I want to get to their questions if we can. One caller responding to what you said earlier, Mike, said, would like to know specifically what issues both of you feel Bush is lying about. I mean, what documents did he forge? I think this is something you stated earlier in the broadcast, Mike.
Mohammed al-Baradei, who is the head of the IAEA, the Atomic Inspections Unit of the Weapons Inspectors, has declared that that information that was used by Secretary Powell in his presentation to the United Nations as to why we should go forward militarily was inauthentic. And when pressed, he said, in fact, it was forged. I don't know that Mr. Bush forged it, but what I'm suggesting is it had to have been vetted by U.S. intelligence from no matter what its source. We know that the plagiarism of the doctoral student here in California that was used in that same argument was misused without the man's permission. Some of it was edited to give a better, from their perspective, a more forceful presentation of the facts that were then 12 years old, which has only subsequently come out. Mr. Bush has said time and time again, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. That has not yet been demonstrated, and as no less a hawk than Zbigniew Brzezinski said recently, suspicion is not evidence. What we need before we can act militarily or any other way appropriately is evidence rather than suspicion.
Robert?
Yes, I think that one of the things I think about with the, you know, the recent forged document that came forward, in which now the, quote, FBI is investigating how this forgery happened, but had the tables been turned, had that come from Iraq, can you imagine, or had their foreign minister gone on television and cited evidence that was, in fact, fake, and they were clearly proven otherwise, the bombs would have dropped already.
We're talking to Robert Greenwald and Mike Farrell today in Media Matters. We have time for another caller or two. If you do call in at 333-9455, you'll have to give the question to our producer, Ben Scott, who will relay it to me by computer. Here's a question that I wanted to get to earlier in the show, and I'm glad a caller called it in, and who wondered, you know, what's the story with celebrity culture playing such a prominent part in our lives in general, but also in our politics, sort of substituting celebrities for people? I mean, how do we get around? Is it a problem? And if it is, how do we get around it? I mean, this is something you're living through. And of course, this is what a lot of the criticism of celebrities, whether genuine or insincere, but nonetheless criticism that exists, is that this is a real problem.
I trust that was a slip of the tongue. Substituting celebrities for people is celebrities still qualify as people. And in fact, they still qualify as citizens of the United States. So, you know, all celebrities are doing, and I think the issue of celebrity culture really is something that ought to be examined in our society. It's way out of whack, in my view. But as long as those people who have some success in our business or other businesses are elevated to the level of celebrity, and they then have attention danced upon them from the media, we have to figure out a way to deal with that. I personally think it's entirely inappropriate for the for people to come to me for questions about whether or not we should go to war in Iraq instead of going to former Ambassador Joe Wilson or Admiral Jack Shanahan or Zbigniew Brzezinski or